Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. Today, I'm joined with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are we doing today?
Very good, Coach Steve. We're coming towards the home stretch. That is always an awesome time.
That's right, Nick. You know, we have 2 weeks left in the challenge, so week five this week. And I must say, you know, this last like little bit of the challenge is always like the tough bit of the challenge. It's always the grind. You know, we've kind of put in some good hard work over the past month. And then now, you know, our bodies are fatigued, our emotions are fatigued, mentally we're fatigued, we're tired. We getting to that tail end of the challenge. And now, you know, we do need to just dig in a little bit, show some grit and get through the last couple of weeks of the challenge and to finish strong as we roll into Christmas, roll into the New Year's and get excited for Tuesday, the 22nd of February, 2-2-2, 2-2-Tuesday. I'm excited for that day.
Let's start preparing now.
But yes, you know, like I just said, you know, we are seeing a shift in, you know, the motivation of challenges. And we see that every challenge at this stage of the challenge, that last like quarter, is when things get tough. Things aren't easy anymore. The big motivation to start the challenge has kind of died off. That honeymoon phase is over. And now it's just, you know, hard work. And yeah, we just get real tired. And, you know, there is no way around it. We're just going to kind of show that grit, that effort, and, you know, give it all our all for this last little bit. And then, you know, we can rest and recover, and then we do it over and over again. And that's just part of the journey of being in fitness, is that it's tough. It's not easy. And we just need to show some grit to get through it. Right, Nick?
That's right. It's very normal as well. So you're probably on the scale of not being normal if you don't have your little dips and your self-doubts and sort of your questioning why you're doing it. That's probably, you know, you'll have to give us a bit of a shout out if you don't ever feel like that. So it's really, how do you navigate that? What do you revisit? It might be your initial goals. It might be readjusting the goalposts if you feel you've already met those goals. Just having a little bit of a talk to yourself and seeing why you're doing it, how you want to finish. I love to always picture and visualize how I'm going to finish. So that's something that gets me through whatever I'm doing at the time. I like to look at the end picture. So I make that up in my head. Vision board is good too if you're into that sort of stuff. You know, vision board can be done just by screenshotting your favorite things, just keeping it there, stuff like that. Just anything that you can do to get you through, but it's very normal.
Absolutely. And we do have some resources for you if you are feeling like isolated and tired and fatigued and wanting to give up. And probably the biggest resource is something like our online communities. So I'm talking about our forum, I'm talking about our journal, and of course, I'm talking about our social hub on that Facebook community group, where if you are feeling down, you can lean onto others in a certain extent. You know, they can't do it for you. They can't go to the gym and lift the weights for you or do your meal prep for you, but you can find someone who may be able to offer you a little bit of a pick you up, maybe give you a little bit of a motivation, a little bit of a kick to just keep on getting through. And, you know, that person could be someone that you live with. That person could be someone you work with, friend, family, or it could be some anonymous person online. So we do, humans, benefit from leaning on other people to get us through that tough time. And then you may be in a position now where you're feeling really great and you put your hand up to help somebody else. And I think that's what's powerful about the fitness community. And we see it in the challenge. We see it in gyms. We see it in sports clubs. And that's part, I guess, of being human, is to help each other get through this gritty time.
That's right. I mean, if you were in a choir, which I've been, you, if you're in a choir, you certainly wouldn't, if you, you know, if you felt your voice wasn't at its best, you'd lean on your fellow people in the choir, choristers, to help you out. You wouldn't be like, well, that's it, I'm quitting. You might be like, okay, so what can I do? What are some remedies here? It's the same thing. I think just with fitness, it's so personal and you can take it so personally and you can feel like a failure really easily. And that never stops, I think. You know, it's just ways to tackle. But our community is excellent. You just jump on that Facebook group and you give them a whiff of, I might feel like giving up. And within 20 seconds, you've got 40 people telling you to just keep going. So it's pretty cool.
yeah, we do have a lot of gems in our community that definitely go above and beyond to help others, always putting others first. And it's funny that those who put others first end up getting some really amazing results. So if you are kind of struggling in your own fitness journey, maybe it's time to give something back to others, and you may find that that's what kind of pushes you in the right direction to start seeing those changes in your own transformation. So there's an interesting, you know, way that kind of karma works in fitness. If you give back, it kind of, you reap the rewards of what you sow.
So true, because I think it just takes you out of staring at yourself too much, because that can be a rabbit hole. So, you know, you just give back to others and pay it forward, and it does come back.
I agree. And we do find a common thread in the challenge is that once someone finishes the challenge, they usually put their hand up to be someone like a mentor or offering advice, or there are a large number of people that then go on to choose to become a personal trainer or a coach in some aspect, many going and doing their cert 3 and 4 in fitness or in nutrition or something similar, and, you know, paying it forward to help somebody else. And speaking of my own journey, like once I transitioned from a trainee to a trainer, like a, you know, a gym enthusiast or a fitness enthusiast to a PT to a coach to what I am now, that transition made me a better trainee, because I started questioning everything. I started questioning how I approach things. And as I answered more questions, I had to kind of like upskill so that I was able to help another person. And in turn, I helped myself more. So if you're wondering, you know, how do I take it to the next level in your own fitness journey? Maybe it is going out and helping someone else. Maybe it is becoming like a personal trainer, having a few clients and training them. You may find that you become a better trainee and get better results for yourself, because we've kind of approached fitness from another angle. So there's definitely more that we can do. And especially now that we're in week 5, you may be in that position where you're like, well, what am I going to do next? Am I going to join another challenge? Am I going to turn this into a career? Am I going to become a PT? I'm going to open a gym. Like, what are you going to do? And it's an interesting time to think about all these opportunities. And I must say that, you know, a career in fitness or a career in coaching or a career in helping others transform their bodies, transform their lives, improve their fitness, improve their health is very rewarding, very challenging in itself. But you also reap what you put in, because it makes you a better trainee and more experienced with your own body, your own health, your own fitness, and all these good things that come with that.
100%. And to me, it doesn't feel like work. That's like what we do doesn't feel like work. I know sometimes I will be writing things on a Sunday morning at 5 a.m. and that might be a bit weird, but I do it because I enjoy it as well, and I love to learn and give back. So it's sort of, it's ideal if you've ever felt like that's what you want to do. It's a really rewarding path, I think.
I agree. And I've said this to many individuals that I've spoken to who've told me that they want to go become a personal trainer or do this for 3-4, is that I'm always willing to help someone if they are choosing to move into a fitness career. And Nick, I'm sure you're the same. And this is an open message to anybody listening to this, is that if you're thinking of becoming a personal trainer or a coach or a nutritionist or anything along the same industry, and you want any guidance, support, help, have any random questions, I'm putting my hand up and saying that you can contact me and I'm willing to help. And I'm Nick, I'm sure you're the same. If anybody has any questions about fitness careers or journeys to take or how to avoid all the bullshit that's in fitness and personal training and stuff, you know, I'm more than happy to help you if you have any questions like that. You can message me on somewhere like Instagram, and I always take the time to help you out if that's what you want to do.
Me too. I think some people listening to this will already know that. So shout out to y'all. But yeah, you've got to try and just surround yourself with like-minded people. So we're here. We're approachable. We're contactable for that sort of stuff. Absolutely.
Always. Now, Nick, of course, you know, we just had our week 4 check-in last weekend, moving into week 5, and it's amazing to see all the transformations that are coming in at week 4. You know, it always just blows me away what people are able to do, especially, you know, from that prep weekend to week 2, and then that week 2 to week 4. And then, you know, I'm excited what challenges can do as we roll into week 6. And, you know, now is a good time to start thinking about what are you going to do for your final photos. When are you going to take them? What location are you going to do them in? What camera are you going to use? Like, what kind of lighting are you going to use? Are you going to go down the path of getting like a spray tan and a wax, or are you going to try to go something a little bit more natural so it matches like your starting photos? Like, these are questions that you'd want to start finding the answers to now. All I would say is that there's no right or wrong. And sometimes if you go overboard with your photos, it kind of ruins the transformation. So if you do go full glam and full filter and full lighting and all the things that happen, it kind of ruins the transformation and our judges can't really see the transformation. So I just want you to consider that, you know, how can you portray how much effort that you put into those before and after photos, especially if you want to do well in our final competition.
That's right. A great bit of natural light is always good if you can locate that. Just play around with it. Play around with the times of day. I sort of know, even within my own household, where the areas are. I'm not even doing anything. I'm not even doing any competitions or anything. But I know that 5 p.m. on a Sunday upstairs is the perfect time to take my photos every week. If I do it before and if I do it after, it's not right. It's like that isn't the right lighting. So I sort of know. And you know within your household where the right place is. So if you kind of get to know that, that's also good, not just for the challenge, but moving forward for your own photo references. It's really good to just document your journey. It keeps you accountable, I think.
I like that. And there's this old saying that you don't find the light finds you. Have you heard that one before?
Yeah, that's good, yep. Isn't it?
Yeah. So like when you're in the gym, you know, you don't find the best light finds you, and you kind of catch yourself like, ooh, This is the spot where you kind of like just, you know, oh, look at a little tricep, look at a little bicep, oh, look at a little quad. Oh yeah, this is the light. So the light always finds you. You don't find the light.
So true. Do you know what though? I must say, this is so funny. I can do gym bathroom selfies, everything, but once when I'm actually in the gym doing training, I very rarely take in a mirror selfie in the gym. I'm still quite shy. It's funny, like I just can't do that. But it's good when people can. They look awesome. But, yeah, I haven't mastered that yet. So it might be a new goal for me to do a gym intern, an in-the-gym selfie.
In-the-gym selfie. Maybe that's a little challenge for the week, Nick. We take an in-the-gym selfie.
Yeah, let's both take an in-the-gym selfie. You won't do it, will you? Yes. But not,
I take lots of in-the-gym selfies.
But not at home gym. Not home gym.
Right. Okay.
Outside gym.
Next time I go to an outside gym, I'll take a mirror selfie.
Okay.
I'll tag you in it, Nick.
All right. We'll tag each other. That'll be fun. Everybody can then stalk our Instagrams and see if we've really done it. So there we go. That's our little challenge. We like to challenge each other all the time. We're not competitive at all or anything like that. We're not alphas, are we?
No. Look, Nick, talking about challenges, talking about awards, our awards night is coming up on the 22nd of December, which is a Wednesday. So we couldn't really do it on the Friday because that's Christmas Eve. We don't want to ruin your Christmas Eve plans. So come join us on Wednesday night, the 22nd of December, kicking off at 7:30 p.m. We've got our awards night where we are announcing our top 10, top three. We've got the People's Choice Award, Community Award, and we are announcing another Coaches Award. And this award is being offered to us from One More Reps. One More Rep, we have a really close relationship. The clothing company, One More Rep, and they're giving us two $100 gift vouchers. So one, we're going to be choosing one Max's Coaches Award and one Maxine's Coaches Award, and they'll win themselves a gift voucher for some fresh new clothes so that they can get a new outfit that fits their body, their new transformed body with fresh clothes. So that's going to be exciting. That's an award that's chosen by Coach Nick and myself. And we base this off of a few different ideas. We like to find maybe someone who has a really amazing transformation, but maybe their transformation might have just missed out of the top 10. Or maybe someone that we've kind of followed their journey over multiple challenges, and that individual might have missed out of the top 10 a few times, but we want to reward that. or maybe we're following them on the journals, maybe on social medias, maybe someone who asks lots of questions on the forum. So this is someone that we're just going to choose after a little bit of research, but you'll find out on Wednesday who we are choosing for our coaches award. It's going to be lots of fun, Nick.
Yeah, I love that. I love the fact that we get a little hand in who gets an award. And yeah, it's just based on so many different factors that there's nothing really, you can only be yourself and just keep rocking it out. You never know.
It's going to be good. I'm excited. I'm always excited for the awards night. It's always a fun event. It's live streamed to our Facebook social hub where, you know, a few hundred people join us live and we get to see your comments coming in live and you get to see some awesome reactions of people as they've just found out that maybe they're in the top 10 or the top three, maybe they won the challenge. Always a fun night. I always look forward to it.
Yeah, me too. It's good. It's, and especially around Christmas this time, it's going to be so exciting to have that.
It's going to be so good.
End the year in a really good fashion.
Talking about fashion, I'm going to have to grab me like a Christmas suit, I reckon.
Yeah, I know. We've got to figure out. I might put some reindeer ears on because I know that we have them in our house. I won't have to even go shopping. So I'll do a bit of a reindeer outfit or something, but or some Christmas earrings for sure. So I can't wait, and everyone should tune in and see what we're wearing as well, because you know we're very fashionable.
Oh, always. Yes. Nick, let's move on to our non-scale victories for the week. So our NSVs are individuals who have found a victory that might not be linked to the scales. So Nick, take us away. Who have you found this week?
So our first NSB for this week is Tanya Kortik. Shout out to Tanya. She's very active in the Facebook group, on the forum, asking questions. She's really stepping it up, this challenge. She's really wanting to get some bolder shoulders. So she's really engaging with her weights, her technique. And she just says, this week was a week of PBs for me, leg press, quad machine, chest press, calf raises, and two unassisted chin-ups. She says, I then realized that what was really happening was I stopped listening to that little voice in my head that said, you can't go heavier, you will hurt yourself. So I do know that a lot of women that are lifting weights for the first time, or maybe haven't had somebody to guide them through, they've done a lot on their own, they get very afraid of injury. It could be men too. I've just worked with a lot of women that are very afraid, and fair enough. And so there's a bit of fear going on, and sometimes even with certain numbers, even like if you're doing a dumbbell. So for me, if I'm doing you know, a dumbbell shoulder press or something like that, once I get past a certain weight, there's still that little bit of fear, but it becomes a thrill instead of a complete fear for your life. But I think that that's very normal. So so she's gotten through that, and she said, now this has only taken 6 challenges for that light bulb moment to happen, but she's so happy that it finally did. So from now on, Tanya says, I will try. If it doesn't feel right, I will modify. That's a great little rhyme that you can say to yourself in the gym. And I think it's also, it really falls in line with your dad jokes as well. You know, you like try and modify and rhyming and stuff. And I'm sure that in your own head, Coach Steve, sometimes you say little tricks to yourself as well just to get through. Tanya's message to people who are at home just starting out, she says to be proud and keep going because it will happen. So that's an NS victory to the max. NS victory, yes.
To the max. I love that, Tanya. That's a really good one. I love the rhyming. I can, I will try, I will modify. And I think you're totally right where, you know, both men and women, we definitely have a fear of progression, especially when things get heavy. We, you know, we have to focus a bit more. It takes a little bit more skill, and there's a bit more risk involved. You know, if you're bench pressing now, you know, your body weight, you know, if you kind of are not focusing, if your technique isn't, you know, adequate, yeah, of course, that bar can kind of fall and, you know, fall on you, and that can cause a little bit of harm. But I will say that weightlifting, especially like bodybuilding style weightlifting, is probably the safest sport out there with very low injury rates, you know, 1 injury per 1,000 hours, right? Which is just crazy. You could be training for 3-4 years before you have an injury. You compare that to something like, let's say, AFL, and they face something like 20 to 30 injuries per 1,000 hours. So it's ridiculously safe to be doing weightlifting. And that, you know, your body is strong and robust. It isn't fragile, and you can probably go heavier than what you're doing now. If you're grabbing the 2 kilo dumbbells, that's like grabbing a 2 liter carton of milk when you go shopping. Like, you definitely are stronger and you can lift more and you can do it safely. It really just takes a bit of focus in the moment, because imagine like you're playing a sport, you've got to focus. And Tanya, you've had that light bulb moment, which is awesome. So go heavier, go stronger, let's get the bolder shoulders and let's see what we can do. Congratulations, Tanya.
Well done, Tanya. Brilliant. So the next one is our mate, Adriana McCulloch. So Adriana McCulloch's also had a light bulb moment in this challenge. She's really just putting herself out there, like as we often encourage everybody to do, because it really, putting yourself out there, as we've said, really just helps with those results, because you make yourself accountable. But also what Adriana's decided to do is help others. So it's pretty much going with our whole philosophy today. So Adriana says, week four, feeling amazing. Week three was a little tougher, where I think I'd overtrained and was feeling a little too inflamed. Adjusted my schedule this week to add in an extra rest day and focused on nailing my hydration, inflammation reduced. Have felt re-energized and got some PBs with volume squats and volume deadlifts, and have gone up in weights with other exercises. Also, I feel more confident this week and determined to finish the challenge strong. The best non-scale victory, however, was when my young son grabbed my arm and said, "Oh, wow, Mum, that feels hard. You must be strong." So cute.
I love that, Adriana. Congratulations.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything to do with kids, anything to do with when they recognize what's going on with us is amazing. And it all registers with them as well. Like, you might think as they grow up that it doesn't, but it comes back and they think of you as strong and as excellent. It couldn't be better. Okay, so the next one, we've got Josh Hashem. And this was from the journals, day 26. I love it. I love people who say what day it is as well, because he'll be able to look back. Woke up at 9:30 a.m. after night shift, only 3 hours sleep. I hit the gym and had a great upper body session of shoulders, chest and triceps. Completed a finisher and tested myself with a 50 burpee finisher as well, which I completed in 2 minutes and 42 seconds. This was about 16 seconds quicker than a workmate who's been doing it regularly and improving his time. Now we've got a bit of healthy competition going. Food to plan, including the pizza on the recipe page, which was awesome, and about 2.5 litres of water. So what a day. That's a pretty good day. With 3 hours sleep, you can probably relate at the moment to that sort of occasional weird type of sleep. And if you could achieve all of that in one day, I reckon you'd be wrapped, wouldn't you?
I'd be really proud of that. So that's awesome, Josh. And yeah, congratulations on your 3 hours sleep. Not that it's a competition, but yeah.
Then bust out 50 burpees.
Bust out 50 burpees. Who needs coffee when you can just do burpees in the morning, hey?
That's right. That's right. So I just loved it because he's still got that fire in him. And I find it really hard to get really super motivated after no sleep. So that's a good way to get on with it and just make the most of that day.
No, congratulations, Josh. Keep it up. Keep the energy going. Keep the fire in your belly going. And I'm sure you'll smash out the 50 burpees in 2:30. So you got 12 seconds to beat. I reckon you'll get there.
Yeah, and then he can have his challenge approved pizza, which I love. And yeah, it's all, everything's good.
Awesome. So I've got a few this week. So the first one goes to Jen Cotter. So Jen Cotter, and she writes, feeling absolutely motivated. Starting to really see some big changes, and I've noticed I am a lot happier now too, not grumpy and unhappy. My life has something to look forward to and accomplish. I love that. Short and sweet, Jen. And I'm glad that you're noticing some changes in your mood. You're feeling happy and you're noticing some big changes. Congratulations. That's awesome.
So good.
The next one here goes to Emily Di Piazzi. Maybe it's Nick's cousin. I feel like I need to say that name with my hands. So Emily writes, feeling really good at the moment. The strength I've gained in my upper body is amazing. Finally able to do chin-ups unassisted for the first time in my life. Feeling so proud of my achievements today. Plus my shoulders are starting to take shape as well. So congratulations, Emily, noticing those bolder shoulders and being able to do some chin-ups unassisted. That's really cool. I like that.
Mm. That's really good. Chin-ups unassisted, massive goal for heaps of people. So as soon as you can do that, it's a weight on your shoulders, not off your shoulders. Yeah. Get it?
I like that. And the last one here goes out to Brianna Darwin. And this was a much longer post, so I've just kind of shortened it up. And you can find this post on the journals. So if you're interested in reading about Brianna, you can go check out the latest journals on the Challenge website. And she writes, I haven't posted in my journal before, but better late than never, right? And I think straight away, I love it when people post for the first time. This goes out to anybody listening. If you haven't posted on the journal yet or haven't engaged on social media, such as Instagram or our Facebook social hub, it's better late than never. It's a great time to start now, you know, engage in our community, make a post and, start reaping the rewards of engaging in a higher body. So I love that, Brianna. And Brianna writes, after posting my 2-week check-in photo, I was getting worried that I wasn't progressing and I knew I was because my strength in the gym was increasing. So I had to be working. I focused on the positives that came from this challenge that wasn't just superficial and physical. I had energy for the first time in a long time, as long as I can remember. My training sessions went from 0 to 100 in intensity. My gut health and skin improved. I didn't feel like I needed to pass out every time I stood up. And most of all, my mental health was the best it had been for years. So who cares what I look like when I'm getting all these other benefits? I'd rather have the extra weight and feel this good every day of the week. And I love that, Brianna. Well, you're starting to see some positive changes in your body, your mood, your gut health, your skin, all these great benefits that come from training, from looking after the food that we're eating. And sure, that might result in being a little bit heavier on the scales because maybe we're building some muscle, maybe we're holding a bit more water in our body. But like you said, who kind of cares about all that stuff when you're noticing all these positive changes? So congratulations to Brianna.
Yes, that's brilliant. I couldn't ask for more from somebody. I think that's so many. What a cracker of a first journal post as well, straight out the gates.
It's so good, Brianna. Yes. And congratulations to all of our non-scale victory participants this week. And, you know, you could be part of our non-scale victory group as long as you make a post either on your journals, maybe in our Facebook social hub, maybe on the forum, or maybe on your Instagram, making sure you use the hashtag Max's Challenge 21 or Maxine's Challenge 21 so that we can see it, or you could just tag the Max and Maxine Challenge as well. Nick, let's move on to our Coach's Corner for the week. So in Coach's Corner, we offer our tip for the week. Nick, take us away. What advice do you have for us?
Oh, I've got advices today. My advices are all about intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation. So I think with this, I'll go through what they both are and examples. But I think, let me just preface it by saying there's no right or wrong in terms of what motivates you. You're not going to be the same as somebody else. You're not necessarily always going to be motivated by things that are happening internally or externally. It might be a mixture of both. And there's absolutely no right or wrong way to approach it. So let me just preface it by saying that. If we think of the purpose of motivation, we know that motivation comes and goes, but it really is something that's going to drive us to achieve something. So whether we are motivated by something that's going on within us or by something that's going on outside of us, it's something that's going to lead us to progress within our lives to the next level. So there are benefits to both type of motivation. I think, at the end of this, I guess you can maybe tell me one example of where you're extrinsically motivated or intrinsically motivated, because it's interesting, I think, to hear about what gets people motivated, just to understand how humans are influenced. So extrinsic motivation refers to the behavior of people to perform tasks and learn new skills because of external rewards, such as, let's just say, for example, such as winning a bodybuilding competition. So it's a competition and there is a reward at the end of it. So intrinsic motivation might be training simply just to improve your own body composition or your own lifting, without putting it into a competitive setting, without necessarily having an external reward, or we could even say external recognition. So have a think about how that sits with you. For example, we see a lot of people in the challenge occasionally going, oh, I think that I've got great abs. Why have I not made the top 50? That sort of a thing. And so that's a bit of extrinsic motivation going on. It's sort of like, are you actually doing it to have the great abs, or are you doing it because you want to make that top 50? And if you don't make it, what happens then to your set of values if it's simply based upon winning a competition or, you know, placing within a competition? Now, the thing is, as humans, we need to rely on that sort of thing sometimes to give us a little pep. You know, like you and I will still, within our own careers, go for little competitions here and there sometimes, or even with ourselves, with the challenge liftoff, whatever we can do sometimes, just for that little, I suppose, bit of extrinsic motivation to then continue on our journeys. But I bet you if they said, there's never a competition ever again, ever happening, would you still train? You and I would both say, absolutely. If mirrors didn't exist, would you still train? Yes. You know, it's that internal feeling for us. But that doesn't mean that you and I do not dip in and out of being extrinsically motivated as well. So it's just interesting to understand where you come from and maybe write down what motivates you. And if it is that sort of the extrinsic, the new activewear, comparing your activewear, rocking up to a class where you're with heaps of other people and you want to be the best. But if that gets you going, then that is fine. That's you, and that's what's going to make you progress. There's nothing wrong with that. What I think happens a little bit with extrinsic motivation, if you're simply just relying on that, is you can get disappointed, especially, for example, in a competition like this one or a bodybuilding competition where there are external judges that have nothing to do with you. They don't know you as a person. They don't know your journey. They're judging one picture, or when you're on stage, they're judging that. They're not judging how difficult it was for you, how you've overcome everything, all of your internal dialogue. They're not aware of that. So it's one thing, and it's very subjective. So you don't necessarily want to base everything on that. So really work on what internally motivates you. So they're the two differences. And if you never thought about it, it does pay to really work on trying to center yourself and finding that internal motivation that will get you out of bed. I mean, during the lockdown, I believe that was probably a big test for us in Melbourne. A lot of people that were extrinsically motivated have had that all taken away from them. So where did you end up, and how can you make it better next time?
Yeah, I like that. That's really good reflection to start thinking about how are we motivated. And I do believe that many of us start our fitness journey being extrinsically motivated. You know, we're thinking about, oh, I want to look a certain way so that I could get something out of my environment. So maybe, you know, you want to try to get that flat stomach or the six pack, maybe because you want to improve your confidence, maybe start dating, maybe try to look better naked, whatever it is, but usually something like extrinsically or external that we're trying to drive us, give us that motivation. And then we slowly transition as we start dabbling in fitness, and we start, you know, feeling good. We see the positive effects of fitness, our mood improves, our gut health improves, our, you know, our overall energy levels improve. And then we're kind of motivated because we want to feel better. We want to improve our health, or we want to, you know, do it for me, or maybe do it for the joy that comes with it. And then that's what kind of drives us long term. Because you're right, Nick, if we focus on extrinsic motivators, you know, we can't always control those things. And if we can't control what motivates us, well, you know, do you want something external to you to determine if you're going to keep doing the fitness thing? But what you rather want is, you know, to be motivated intrinsically. You know, you can control that intrinsic motivation so that when things get tough, you know, you can control that. You know, when the weather's crap outside, you can still control what's driving you internally. So, you know, my advice to you is to start thinking about what intrinsically motivates you. And, you know, as an example, Let's say now, me right now, I have both, you know, intrinsic and extrinsic motivations. So, you know, my goals at the moment is to build some muscle. My goals is to get stronger. And extrinsically, I want to go and compete in a powerlifting competition. And extrinsically, I'm a little bit competitive with some of my buddies who are of similar strength to me. So, you know, I want to try to be stronger than some of my friends so that I can have the accolades to be like, oh yeah, I'm stronger than you in the bench or the deadlift or the squat or whatever it is. And that's very extrinsically motivated because it determines on them and, you know, my social hierarchy in my relationship with some of my friends, which is motivating and makes me go a little bit harder. But isn't what wakes me up in the morning and drives me to do these things. What really gets me up in the morning is that I want to do it for me. So when I was growing up, I wasn't super confident. I wasn't super strong. And now, you know, wake up every morning and I want to have that drive, that hunger in my belly to be the strongest version of myself. I want to be a role model to the people around me. I want to be a role model to my son. You know, I want him to look at me and see me as like a superhero, like, oh wow, dad, you know, so big and strong, you know, rah, rah, rah. Like these are the things that I want. And you know, that's what's driving me internally is to be this type of person. So I use both intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. And I'm aware of that. And there's nothing wrong with either one. But it's a really great reflective exercise. It's to determine where your intrinsic motivations lie and then where your extrinsic motivations lie. Because once you kind of have a good understanding of it, you know, that's when you can kind of manipulate it slightly to kind of give you that little motivation boost when you need it. And that could be when you're struggling to get up out of bed in the morning, or that could be, you know, rep number 7, 8, 9, and 10 on a hard set. And that motivation is what drives you to go that little bit harder.
So true. So true. Yeah, I love it. Good examples, 100%. I'm with you.
Nick, I want to talk a little bit about creating tension. So talking a little bit about physics, a little bit about creating power, and a little bit of biomechanics. So it's going to be fun. I know if I said physics and some of you might have cringed, you're like, oh, Steve, here we go again. But it's going to be good. Okay, so there's this analogy and it's called having a cannon on a canoe. So a cannon on a canoe. And you can visualize this right now. If you have a big cannon, let's say like, you know, medieval times, big cannon, and you place that on a little canoe. So you're in a canoe, you're paddling along, big cannon, and you're going to try to fire that cannon. That cannonball isn't going very far and that canoe will be all over the place and you won't be able to create much power. In contrast, if you had a cannon on the ground, you know, in a big bunker, sturdy, there's bricks around it, it's cemented in, big cannon in, and then you load it up, that cannon's going to fire and be able to create power. So this is what I want you to think about when you're training. Do you have your cannon, which is where you're creating force? Let that be in a squat, a deadlift, a bench press, a bicep curl, you know, we're creating force on an apparatus. Are you trying to create force on a canoe where you're unstable? Or are you trying to create stability to be able to create power? Let's use an example. So let's say on a bench press, many individuals would think, a bench press, you lie down, which is awesome. How good is an exercise where you have to lie down? You grab hold of a barbell and you push and you lower it back down and you push and then you know, you're done. But a bench press is really a full body exercise. So if you look at some high level powerlifters, they would be utilizing almost every muscle of their body to try to create tension, to try to create stability, to try to create support to be able to complete the bench press. So if you check out some of my videos on, let's say, Instagram doing a bench press, I wear a weightlifting belt when I do a bench press, which some of you might be like, that doesn't make sense. What I'm doing is I'm trying to use that belt to kind of push my diaphragm, my abdomen into that belt to kind of create a nice stable midsection. I'm trying to drive my feet into the ground. So I'm utilizing my glutes, my hamstrings, and even my quads. I'm trying to straighten my leg out. So I'm creating tension from the ground. And then I'm trying to drive my shoulder blades together. So I create a nice flat surface to push against and drive my shoulder blades into the bench as well. Have a nice arch because an arch is nice and strong. If you look at architecture, an arch is stronger than something that's flat. So I'm creating all these, using all these tools to create tension, to move my cannon onto a hard surface so that I can create power and push against. Now, if I was to take all of that away, I would only be able to press a fraction of what I'm able to press when I've created tension. So, let's using some numbers at the moment, I'm repping out, 120, 125 on the bench press, which is low numbers compared to some guys that I know, and then probably high numbers compared to some numbers that maybe you're lifting right now. But if I wasn't creating that tension, if I wasn't driving my feet into the ground or driving my shoulder blades into the bench, or bracing through my belly, I would struggle to bench, 60 kilos. I would struggle to bench that for reps because it would be all over the place. I would be basically like on a canoe and unstable and unable to create force. And I actually had this experience just the other day. I did go to a commercial gym and I was using some of the machines and I wanted to use a machine chest press. I wanted to use one of those plate loaded machine chest presses that, unilateral, so each arm has its own weight. Okay, and there was one of them that was like vertical. You sit down on it and you grab hold of the handles and you push. Maybe you've seen this one in a commercial gym. And when I was pushing with this weight, I was unable to kind of push my feet into the ground. Like the chair was just a little bit too high. I couldn't really get a good grip on the ground, and I was just really struggling to use a weight that was stimulating enough. So I, maybe put like 20 kilos on each side and I was repping out, and I couldn't really feel that brace to be able to create this tension in my chest that I can with like a bench press. Then next to this machine was another chest press, and this was a little bit more horizontal. So you kind of lie down a little bit into it. But when I was able to get into this position, I was able to brace through my legs and brace more through my upper back. As I was pressing through, I was able to load more weight onto the machine, get more reps out, and then feel a better stimulus on my body. So if you're sitting there thinking, well, Steve, aren't you cheating if you're using all these stabilizing things? I would say, no, I'm utilizing them as a tool so that I can use more weight, so that I can create more stimulus on the muscle to stimulate growth. So the main takeaway is that start thinking about how you are completing your exercise. Are you kind of going through the motions? Are you a cannon on a canoe? Are you unstable? Are you not bracing? And is there ways that you can create more stability through your exercise, through bracing, so that you can move your cannon onto a hard surface, that you can actually create force, create power, so that you can lift some heavy weights and you can start seeing some muscle growth? So there you go, cannon on a canoe.
Good, really good. I especially loved just that connection with the floor, especially, yeah, if you are using machines, that might be something that people forget, especially if the machine doesn't quite fit your own dimensions, because that can happen, it can really happen, especially if, if it's in a commercial gym and maybe, the seat can't be moved quite forward enough or backward enough, it all matters. And that real tension and that pushing off the floor, you really do have to have that connection. And yeah, I don't even know who would say any of that is cheating, because it's just basic proper movement. So give it a crack. I like it.
Give it a crack. I think the biggest change that you can make instantly right now, doing the same exercises you're doing now, the same machines, everything, is something like the Valsalva maneuver. So that's the one where you go, right? And you can imagine what to do when I make that sound. So we're kind of pushing force against like pursed lips. So our lips aren't closed. We're just like pushing our breath against that. And we're trying to like brace through our midsection. Imagine like if you play rugby, you're going for the scrum, you brace up and you collide into someone. Maybe if you've played any footy in the past, you're going to hip and shoulder someone, you brace up to create that force. That is a skill. And if you're able to create that tension inside your body when you lift, let that be on a bench press, let that be a bicep curl, let that be a machine chest fly, whatever it is, create that bracing, the weight will feel a lot lighter, which means that you can probably go heavier, which means that you could start making some progress in your training. So there are tools that we can utilize to make you stronger and stimulate muscle growth. So Where is your cannon is what I say.
Perfect. I love it. Got me cannon ready.
You can you can on can off can no I'll stop with my puns. I'm gonna think of something with can on.
Can definitely
yes. Nick, let's move on to some questions for the week. So the first question here, talking about the festive season, we're talking about Christmas or any other celebrations that you are completing over this holiday period. What are some festive season food swaps that I can make? Nick, take us away. What advice would you give this individual?
All right, you're staring at the Christmas table. There is temptation everywhere. And the good thing is, let me just say your classic turkey. Now, turkey is something that bodybuilders have anyway. It's one of the leanest cuts of meat. Just if you get a bit of that juicy middle bit of the turkey, you are laughing, first up. It's one of the absolutely leanest, best cuts of meat that you can possibly get. So take the time to enjoy that. If you're a turkey person, there's turkey everywhere. So you should actually take some turkey and put it into a Tupperware and take it away and have it later as a meal. So you can have your lean cuts of meat. That's what I'm trying to say. Often people will bring chickens as well to pad out the Christmas feast. So lean cuts of meat. Also, I must say, Australia, if you have your barbecues, if you have a prawn, prawns are also awesome, high in zinc. They're fantastic. So far we've mentioned three foods that I would actually eat in a like contest phase almost to the end of prep, mind you. So we're doing well so far. We just don't want to necessarily add all the sauces that come with it. I do find that in a general Christmas table spread type thing, you have a lot of control over what you're going to eat. It's often not dished out for you. It's often something that you will be able to choose. So lean cuts of meat, nice vegetables. There's often roasted vegetables, which should be fine. They may have a little bit of oil, but it's Christmas. And salads, you want to look out for salads. You just want to make sure that they're not overdressed. You want to go for greens. In terms of the dessert side of it, I know that, look, I'm going very traditional here. There's your pavlova and then there's puddings. You can, if you're really, really keen on being committed, you can really swap a lot of that for your fruits. Beautiful summer fruits at the moment. I've just noticed for the kids, there's now in our household, well, not just the kids, but, you know, for their school lunches, cherries, apricots, nectarines. So they're beautiful, really gorgeous foods. So it's not like you're just stuck with an apple. So there's all the festive fruits. And then obviously just if you can stay away from the creams, things like that, and possibly also just take a minute in between courses to just check if you're actually full, because the excitement, the chatting to other people, the heaps and heaps of food there, you probably will reach for seconds before you've even realized what's going on. So just try and eat mindfully if you can. And also another trick that I like to do is tell myself, sure, you can have as much as you want, and then you'll find that you don't really want as much as you think you do. It's just if you tell yourself you can't have that, you suddenly will want it. It's just that little bit of reverse psychology that I've learned over the years that helps a little bit. Rather than restricting yourself, you just say have whatever you want, and then you probably won't end up having as much as you think that you want. In terms of the alcohol side of it, I'd be look, you know, we know we say steer clear, but obviously in a festive situation, you can sort of go for the clearer drinks, say a vodka with a soda. Just remember that it has got calories and your body will prioritize burning alcohol first. You want to enjoy yourself, but you just don't want to overdo. The other thing is make sure that you have something to eat before you go, just a little bit of a snack, and that will help you from eating, say, the snacky things like the breads, the pretzels, the other things, the dips, Steve. The dips will be out in force.
Oh, geez, the dips. What will I do?
You'll eat them and then you'll go and squat. That's what you will do.
Yeah. Or I go to some dips after my dip.
Yes. I think all of that. Oh yeah, the other thing is if people are offering, you know, soft drinks and things like that, just try and make sure that it's your zero calorie ones, because that they are quite easy to overconsume with the sugar and carbs. You just don't want those empty carbs. That's the thing, I suppose. So those ones that you could have had two slices of bread for like a drink of your average soft drink. You know, it's usually about 25 to 30 grams of carbs for just one serving of that soft drink. So unless you're going to go and run a marathon immediately after and you can use those carbs, you know, really quickly, your body can churn through them, don't do it.
Yeah, I think when it comes to something like diet soda, that can be an easy way to like have a drink but then not have something alcoholic. So let's say everybody at your Christmas function is having a beer, a wine, a scotch, or whatever tradition you have in your like festivities. You know, if you just have a glass of like Diet Coke, you know, you have something in your hands, you have something bubbly, it tastes kind of sweet, has no calories in it, and you could still be part of the conversation, have something to drink, and be socially interactive with people, but then not have the calories associated with that and the other things that come with drinking alcohol, such as just getting drunk or inebriated, where you're more likely to reach for that second, third, fourth serving, or that extra serving of pudding or the creams or the crackling or whatever it is that is your kryptonite. So there's a few strategies that you can make come Christmas or the festivity seasons. Yes.
Absolutely. Yep. And don't be ashamed of it. Tell everybody, be loud and proud if that's what you're doing, and just make it a thing and say, this is what I'm doing. People will probably ask you questions, and suddenly you'll be the person at the party that everyone's saying, I need to start training. Now you tell me where I need to start. And then you sit there and you go, oh, all right.
Yeah.
A queue forms.
It happens at my family Christmas functions. So like in my family, like I'm the fitness guy. So come like Christmas time, there's certain family members that I only see at Christmas time. And you know, your second or third cousins or your distant aunties and uncles you never see, and they always come up to me and they're like, oh Stephen, you know, I want to lose weight, or like, oh, I wanted this, or like some of them show me their like x-rays, right? Because that's what I do in the clinic. So they show me their, like, you know, their MRI of their shoulder, and they're like, is it bad? And I'm like, okay, like, you know, so I spend like all of Christmas I'm like diagnosing people and giving them advice and things like that. So I'm like, ah, oh, great Christmas. But you know, it is part of like my identity to be that person, and maybe you could be that person too, where, you know, you are helping others, and maybe that it is in a positive way, because it's very easy to become vain in the fitness space, where, you know, let's say you do get really lean in the challenge, you've got the six pack, you're looking all the bits, and you go to your family function, and you know, there's your cousin Bob, who, you know, real classic dad bod, is like, oh shit, you know, they might cause some vanity things, and that's okay. So we need to approach it very cautiously, only offering advice if someone wants advice, or if they come to you. So, you know, you can quickly become the asshole in fitness, and you very quickly become like the hero in fitness. So just think about your actions, because yeah, it's very easy to become unliked because of those things. And we all acknowledge that.
Yeah, definitely. I think you become a bit of a legend in your own lunchbox when you first start it all. And I remember having a story of when I did a triathlon, and I was so excited because I'd won, and I was so loud, and I said, I beat that person over there. And I remember Shane saying to me, you haven't won the Olympics, like, get over it. And ever since then, I'm sort of very cautious of how I approach it, because it is true. You don't want to. Yeah, you want to chill. If anyone asks you a question, you can explain it. And also, yeah, just remember to have empathy, because people are coming, they're vulnerable when they're telling you their problems as well. So they're sharing it with you, and they probably just want to know a few pointers as to how to start. They probably don't want to know your marathon time or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, talking about advice, like sometimes, you know, the simplest advice goes the longest way. So if someone says like, oh geez, what can I do to start losing weight? Sure, you could tell them everything you've learned on the challenge, you know, 100 different things. They're not going to remember any of that. Or you could say something simply as, oh, like, you know, try to get your steps up, you know, maybe start just going for a walk once a day around the block, 10 minutes. Just start doing that. And then slowly build up from there. Maybe you walk around the block twice. Maybe you buy a Fitbit and start counting your steps. Or maybe you start counting how many minutes you walk per day. Or maybe you buy a treadmill for your house. You know, start with something simple like that. And then, you know, when they come to you the next time, you might say, okay, let's join a gym. Or let's start looking at your food intake. Maybe drink more water, get better sleep. And you build on, because it's very easy to kind of bombard someone with information overload, which just isn't helpful for anybody. So just think about being the superhero in fitness, not the asshole.
Yes. Very true.
All right, Nick, the next question here, eating back calories. So an individual has asked us, should they eat back the calories that they expend from exercise? So let's talk about what, let's talk about what it is. So you may have come across this online through your own, like, you know, searching or researching, or you may have come to this conclusion and rationalized it yourself. And what it is that an individual would utilize something like an activity tracker to determine how many calories they've expended through exercise. So let's call that X, or, you know, maybe like 500 calories you've expended from exercise. And now you've now thought, okay, well, if I expended 500 calories from exercise, am I then allowed to have an extra 500 calories from food to kind of balance up the excess, the energy that I've expended? Okay, so pretty logical conclusion to make. And let's talk about it in the challenge. So for the challenge, my advice is no. My advice is to not eat back calories expended from exercise. The only caveat would be someone who is maybe an endurance athlete, so maybe someone like Coach Nick training for her Ironman. Yeah, okay, if you know that you've expended, you know, a couple of hundred or a thousand calories because you've been exercising for 9 hours that day, okay, you probably want to eat back your calories. If your goals are not linked to body composition, yeah, okay, maybe you could have a little bit more if you've had some really big, a really big workout. But let's talk about some problems that we face with this purely simplistic rationalization, where you've kind of gone, all right, well, I've expended this much energy, therefore I need to consume this much energy. So the first thing that is the problem with this is that the way that we're measuring our energy expenditure is wrong. Very high chance that it is wrong. Even the most advanced tools can be wrong by up to, you know, 80%, which is huge. So if you think that you've expended 500 calories because you went to the gym for half an hour, I don't know about that. I'm not sure. If you're saying that your, you know, smartwatch, let that be Fitbit, Garmin, Apple Watch, the most high-tech thing going around, you know, you as an individual, there's lots of variables that can determine how much energy you expended, from your height, your weight, to the temperature in the room, to how much food you've consumed, the time of day, you know, where you are in your cycle, how tired you are. Lots of factors that determine how much energy you expended. And if we're only going off of a heart rate measure based on some of these smartwatches, you know, there's a high chance of error. Even worse would be some of those calorie expending tools on like a machine. So let's say on a treadmill, you've been walking on a treadmill and says that you've expended 100 calories. Who knows? So there's the first problem that we face, that start number of what we're going to eat back. There's a high chance that that is incorrect. Then when we go to consume these calories to eat back, there's a high chance that we get that number wrong as well. So there's even research that suggests that dietitians even get it wrong when they are measuring their own calories. So if you have said, okay, I've expended 100 calories because I walked on a treadmill for half an hour, then you're going to go have 100 calories of food. There's a high chance that you will get that 100 calories of food wrong. And because you've done some exercise, there's a high chance that you're then going to overconsume food as well if you are trying to balance it out. So now our target to try to balance it out is likely to be incorrect as it is. We then need to think about, okay, well, are we choosing to reward ourselves with food? Have you completed exercise? And then now your knee-jerk reaction is to go and indulge because you want to eat back the energy that you've expended from exercise? And is that a positive relationship with food that you want to maintain? Most cases, no. Like, we don't really want to be using food as a reward for a workout. That's not great long-term relationships with food. The next thing I would say is that, you know, we don't actually expend that much energy when we are doing a formal workout. So when we look at our overall energy expenditure, our biggest one comes from our basal metabolic rate, just to maintain our body, to maintain our brain, our gut function, our bones, our muscle, our skin, our hair. That's where most of our energy goes towards. Our lowest energy expenditure is our EAT, which is our exercise activity thermogenesis. A higher level of energy expenditure is our NEAT, our non-exercise activity thermogenesis, making up almost three times as much as our formal exercise. So if you are going to the gym and thinking about, okay, I'm going to try to expend as much energy, well, firstly, that's not really the goal of going to the gym. We're trying to stimulate muscle to grow to affect this basal metabolic rate. We're not just trying to expend energy. We're trying to put it towards something positive. A better way to expend energy is just to simply focus on our step count. So we're trying to increase our overall non-exercise activity so that we can increase our energy output. And finally, what I would say is that most energy prediction tools, so I'm talking about calorie prediction tools, would factor in the energy expended through exercise activities. So if you are thinking that, okay, this calculation predicted that I need to consume 2000 calories today, and then I've done 500 calories of exercise, so now I'm on 2500 calories, I therefore need to consume 2500 calories. Okay, that starting number of 2000 calories would have included the energy that you expend through exercise. And the reason why is because exercise, let's say this number of 500, if you have a really, really hard workout, it might go up to like 550. Or if you have a really low workout, it might be 450. So the energy that you put towards your workout is so small in the calorie range when you compare that to other bigger rocks in this pool of energy expenditure. So the main takeaway is that, one, your watch could be wrong. Two, your energy intake could be wrong. Three, do you really want to reward yourself? Four, your calorie prediction tool probably counts it back in. And then probably five is the goal is that we're trying to, you know, tip the scales for body composition. We're trying to consume less food than we expend. We're trying to consume less energy than we expend. And if we are trying to eat back, that kind of goes against our overall goal of trying to tip the scales, because we're trying to, you know, go the opposite way. So that's kind of like the long answer to it. Main takeaway, no, don't eat back your calories unless you're maybe an endurance athlete or you have goals that are not linked to body composition. And then even then it gets a little bit iffy.
So true. And also, it is built into our calculator that we factor in your activity level, which then includes factoring in those calories when we initially calculate how many you should eat a day. So sometimes people forget that, but it's like we haven't just given you calories just to stay alive. We've also given you the calories that you've said in terms of your exercise, if you're lightly active or moderately active. So that's also included in there. So it's not as though you're just always eating only to stay alive. There are those calories anyway. So it just gets super, super tricky when people add back more, because you may, as you've said, end up in a calorie surplus, which isn't what you want. So don't listen to your Fitbit. Just look at it for your walking. And also, I think even my fitness pal, I mean, it's very nice. It's very kind to you, but it does say you've done this much exercise and you still need to eat this many calories. And I if I was the owner of that, I would get rid of that feature, because it's very confusing for people.
It is. It is. All I would say is that, you know, when we look at calories, which is a way to measure our energy, it is kind of like a dynamic number where, you know, just because a certain formula says that you need to have X amount of calories, that doesn't mean that X amount of calories is your calories, you know, forever. What a better way to measure it is kind of what we've spoken about in the podcast in the past, is to think about the goal. All right, we're trying to lose weight. Okay, you know, start tracking your body weight changes. if your body weight is moving in the right direction at a certain rate, great, you know, keep the calories as they are. However, if your weight is not dropping at a certain rate that you want it to, then we can either choose to decrease our calories or increase our energy expenditure through increasing our step counts. And that's probably the best way to kind of like dynamically find what our calorie intake is for ourselves. If we're just kind of like taking that step back, trying to work it out all on paper and then going and doing it, you know, it's better to kind of like start doing it and then like get all the data and then make those decisions along the way. So, you know, just think about the approach that you're trying to take. Okay.
Beautiful. Very good.
The next one here, Nick, is a question about food. You can answer this one. So what types of food should I be having to get me through a workout? So Nick, take it away. What advice would you give this person?
So to get you through a workout, you want to think about that, the food way before you're even going through that workout. So what you do probably about 90 minutes before you work out is going to probably, let's say training session as well, rather than workout, because that reminds me of aerobics. But yeah, what you do before that is going to really impact what's going on, apart from also other things such as what you ate the night before, how well rested you are, how well your digestive system's moving, things like that. But what kind of foods should you eat before you work out? Definitely foods that are faster acting within you. So you don't want to you don't want to have a hugely high fat meal, because fat takes a while to digest. So for example, let me just say like an example of something that might not be great is, say, a giant bowl of pasta with creamy sauce, avocado, ham, just all those sorts of things. That might be something that you might have post workout if you factored that in. But you want something that's really simple, simple to digest.
Have you ever watched The Office? You know, the TV series The Office.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
If you remember that episode where they do like the 5K run, and yeah, and Michael goes and carbo loads, he says, yes. And he has a big bowl of the carbonara. Yeah,
yes,
it just reminded me. Exactly,
that's sort of what I was thinking. Yeah.
The carbo load. Oh god, yeah. carb load.
The thing is, I know a lot of triathletes love to have their chicken pesto pasta the night before. It's like a tradition. But yeah, that is the night before. You certainly wouldn't have it on the day. So, something that's really fast acting. Not hugely high in fiber, high in simple carbs, and something that can just be easily digested. So for example, for what I like to have is, for me, I love to have a frozen strawberry protein smoothie. So it just has a scoop of protein and some frozen strawberries and some water. And I like to make it the consistency of ice cream or gelato, but that is what I have about an hour, 90 minutes before I head into the gym. I don't have any more, I don't have any less. I'm fairly used to it, and I feel like that gives me enough energy. Now, I know that on the forum, this particular person also mentioned that they were struggling during the workout with an energy dip. So I personally wouldn't eat during a workout. So you could have some sort of a drink. I think, something like a Gatorade. You can actually get them with you don't have to have a whole bunch of sugar in them, but you can have the electrolytes and stuff. But yeah, you can have a full sugar Gatorade if you want to have that really quick acting carb. Or you can have something like your Sip and Burn within our range, just something that's going to give you that little bit of an extra pep. But yeah, something really simple to digest. That's why you see a lot of bodybuilders have a whole bunch of cereals in their cupboards. And, you know, we think of cereals as bad foods, but if you look at the nutrition on there, they're very often high in simple carbs and then low in fats, like your rice bubbles. Rice bubbles is one that is a good one. And if you're really, like, if you're really going to lift heavy, you might be able to have a Cocoa Pop. But I don't want to say that because it's, you know, something that it's very high in sugar and stuff, but just those sorts of things, if you're ever going to plan them into your day, it'll be before you work out, just to get that energy, but not exactly before. Just give it about an hour and a half before. So what do you eat before you work out or train?
Yeah, it does kind of mix around. Like often lead towards something like a smoothie like you would be having. Usually I'd reach for something like fruit. If I prepared like rice, I would choose to have like a white rice with something, because white rice usually digested quickly. And then sometimes it is literally just like leftovers. Or if I'm training earlier in the morning, it is, I usually have like oats for breakfast. That's, you know, like kind of more of a complex carb. So if I'm having that for breakfast, maybe training that mid morning, that usually starts to digest and get into my system around then. So I don't have a really strong routine. It does kind of change around a little bit.
That's the thing. And also you've got to play with what you're used to. I really feel, even it's okay to have your complex carbs, but just not too close to working out, but also just see how things make you feel. Because I know that if I have them too close to training, it's almost better if I train fasted, even though that is a strange thing. I have noticed that I will be very sluggish and it'll take me a long time to warm up because I'm obviously digesting. I can't stand that feeling. That annoys me. I prefer to go off pure adrenaline, which isn't healthy, but if I had the choice of the two, you know, if there was only those two things and I had, and someone said, you have to have a huge meal before you train, I wouldn't want to. Whereas I could eat a massive meal and go straight for a walk and it wouldn't bother me at all. I could go for a giant walk the second after I finished. I could probably eat while I'm walking. it wouldn't matter. But just, with training, I do see people in the gym occasionally with bowls of food, and I think, I don't know how you can do that. That's not me. But some people are just extremely dedicated to their eating regime as well.
Talking about nutrition, just as a brief little sidestep, you know, talking about the idea of like, let's say, cereals or sugar even, we do need to remember that there are like multiple conversations that you could have in nutrition. For this podcast, for the challenge, we're mainly referring to body composition changes, you know, the idea of we're trying to lose body fat and build muscle. For that conversation, most of those conversations around sugar and, the different types of foods aren't really relevant. You know, we're mainly talking about energy in versus energy out for body composition. Another camp you can talk about is something like performance. Similar conversation for performance, you know, you may not be overly concerned about, energy in versus energy out. You may be talking more about nutritional timing, about when you can get the most nutrition for your performance. And an example of this would be if you pay attention to what Olympians would eat when they're going to go compete, you might be like, wow, geez, they're having like, you know, Gatorade before they train. Isn't that high in sugar? That's really bad. Well, no, they're using it for their sport. They're utilizing those tools and that nutrition for sports performance. So that's another camp you can talk about. And then finally, the other camp we can discuss is like health-related nutrition, right? Which is in the realm of like dietitians and nutritionists to improve someone's health. And where we face problems is when we're having different conversations about different areas of nutrition, where someone might be like, oh, well, isn't X food bad for you because of health reasons? It's like, okay, well, maybe, but we're talking about body composition. And for that, you know, we aren't really concerned about maybe the health effects of those certain foods because we're mainly concerned about energy in versus energy out. Similar, where you go, oh, well, do you really want to have Cocoa Pops before you train? Isn't that bad for you? It's like, well, I don't know, maybe if you're talking about a health related thing, but for sports performance, hey, it could be really good. It's digested super quickly. It's a really high amount of sugar. It'll give you loads of energy to go and train, and you'll probably get a PB by having that bowl of Cocoa Pops. Is that going to be really good for your health long term? I don't know, but that's the conversation you want to have about health. Okay. Is this a conversation you want to have about performance? Okay. Is this one conversation you want to have about body composition? Okay. There is some areas where they blend and cross over, but often, they're not really like islands of conversations. It's more like a country, you know, the states, and they kind of like cross over a little bit. But, you know, there you can have very distinct conversations in different camps. So let's just be careful that we're not like being dogmatic about nutrition or, really culty with nutrition. We can utilize different tools for different goals.
I personally have been culty, and I've been everywhere with all of this, and I personally find that you've got to do what works for you. And like, just say you've got diabetes or something, of course you're not going to be having Cocoa Pops, but you know, within what, as you were saying, and also like probably that person that has the Cocoa Pops is then going to go home and have their pre-prep meal of their chicken and rice, and off they go, and they won't even, like on the festive season, they won't even consider alcohol. So, you know, it's each person has their own levels of what they do and don't want to do. But foods work differently within your system, and it is all kind of, it's like different petrol at the petrol station. You know, which one are you going to pick today for your car?
Yeah. And even that is a good analogy, because, you know, you could have three different cars for three different goals. You could have your diesel engine, you have a petrol engine, and then you have an electric car. Each one of those is going to utilize three different fuel sources to complete three different tasks. So that diesel could be like a big truck that's going to, you know, move large amounts of soil. Maybe the petrol car is going to be, you know, a people mover, moving people around. And the electric car could be maybe a fancy Tesla, or maybe even like a little go-kart that's maybe like a bit of sports performance or something like that. So, you know, three different fuel types for three different conversations. Is one better than the other? You know, it's just a fuel type. And one would be better than the other for a certain goal. And there might be a little bit of crossover, but, you know, they can be utilized for different things. So, yeah, nutrition can be a bit complicated or complex, but it gets even more complicated when we having a mixed match in our conversations that we're having without defining what we're actually talking about. The final question here, Nick, is a question about diet periodization and how long should I diet for? So to answer this question, let's define our terms. Dieting, we're talking about a fat loss phase where an individual is trying to lose fat or trying to decrease body weight. So my advice to this person is that we want to be dieting or going through a fat loss phase for at least 6 weeks, and at most around this 12-week mark. So 6 to 12 weeks is a good time to go through a weight loss phase before we transition into like a maintenance phase and then maybe rejoin on to a weight loss phase. Now, here are some reasons why. So if we are doing a weight loss phase that is less than 6 weeks, it's simply too short. We probably won't even notice many changes in our body. You know, if we go through a weight loss phase for a week or two, most of those changes are simply water changes in how much water we are holding. And, you know, it can take up to 6 weeks to notice some changes, which is why the challenge at minimum 6 weeks is what we have been running. Then on the other side, 12 weeks is probably at the other end of the scale when it comes to our dieting phase. And mainly because after 12 weeks, we start facing problems. We start facing challenges in our dieting progress. And we would be better to kind of, you know, diet for up to 12 weeks, go back to maintenance where our body weight kind of stabilizes and it doesn't change. You know, going through maintenance for at least 2 to 4 weeks to kind of reset our body and then go into another dieting phase. So we're kind of being really phasic with this rather than just kind of being continuous with it. And here are some reasons why. So after 12 weeks, we do face challenges with adaptation where our body starts to adapt to these changes that we're making. You know, we're trying to tip the scales where we're trying to consume less energy than we expend. And our body does want to go back to homeostasis where we're balanced again. So adaptation slowly creeps in where we start adapting to the energy intake that we are consuming. And that can result in things such like decrease in energy, poor mood, poor sleep, fatigue, stress. You know, if you're consuming less energy, you're going to be tired because you're low in energy and you're more likely to sit on the couch. So then as you're sitting on the couch or not training as hard, what can happen is our energy expenditure slowly decreases to match our energy intake. So then we're not losing weight anymore and we kind of actually hit maintenance because we're not losing weight anymore. But then now we're just feeling shitty because we're not eating much food and not doing much exercise. Because our energy levels are low, that can affect our performance. So our overall performance in the gym can decrease. And then if we're not training as hard and we're not stimulating our muscle to grow, that can lead to potential muscle loss. And that's not what we're trying to do. So as we lose muscle, that's going to decrease our overall energy expenditure. So then we kind of face challenges along the way. The further we diet, the higher chance of muscle loss that can occur, especially as we reach this 12-week mark. If we kind of keep going with that diet, there's a high chance that we're losing more and more muscle rather than body fat at that stage. Then when it comes to actually the training side of things, we face some challenges when we are kind of deloading. So if we're training really hard, reaching a peak, we kind of take some structured time off of training. If we're still dieting and then going through a deload, we're facing problems because they're the two opposing kind of goals. Deload, we're doing less work, and we're also eating less food. That's just kind of both leading in the opposite direction. So my advice to you, diet for 6 to 12 weeks, or go through that weight loss phase, 6 to 12 weeks. Once you reach that 12-week mark, transition into a maintenance phase where we're going through like a recovery diet for at least 2 weeks, preferably up to 4 weeks. We've kind of reset our body, mind, spirit, and then we move into our next phase of dieting for that next 6 to 12 weeks. So we do want to have some sort of structure to our approach to body composition. It's not something that we just want to try to do for months and years on end, because that's when we kind of face challenges with our transformation.
So true. It'll catch up to you at some point. So definitely, I think the theme of today has definitely been, you know, revisit things and look at your own goals, look at your own progress, measure everything, and just absolutely question everything about your own physique and what you're doing.
I like it. Constant reflection, that's how we improve.
Absolutely.
But Nick, let's wrap it up there for episode number 45 of the Challenge Weekly Show. 45 hours of Coach Nick and Coach Steve talking about everything related to fitness, health, and the challenge.
And we've got 45 more in us at least. So look out, everybody.
Please, at least 45 at more.
We've got to get to 100.
That's going to be exciting. Well, we're almost at the midlife crisis, the big 5-0. That's going to be fun. Excellent. If you like this episode, let us know. You could leave a review on iTunes. You could rate us on iTunes. You could share the podcast with a friend, or maybe even share it on your social medias. Tag us as well. We'd love to see that as well. And we'll catch you next week for episode number 46. Nick, how exciting.
Crazy times. Yay. See you then.